I think that it's so important to know how blessed we are to be planners. What I mean by that is we get to choose what families, what individuals and families we want to serve and how we want to serve them. It is very inspiring and empowering. We are changing lives every day. So I just want people to know that I know doing financial planning is hard work. Gathering the assets, liabilities, income, expenses, insurance, it's very tedious, right? But like my dad said, garbage in, garbage out. This is not garbage. These are people's financial lives. So it is okay to be thorough. It is okay to walk away from people who don't buy into planning. So that's what I wanted people to know.
Welcome, my friend, to the Conversations for Financial Professionals podcast. I'm your host, Dominique Henderson. And as a veteran of the financial services industry, I was curious to find out why, despite all the good that financial professionals do, that yet the term financial advisor would clear the room so fast at a dinner party. Why was this? And what was this gap between consumers of financial services and the providers of those services? In this podcast, I seek to close this gap by having forward-moving conversations to advance the profession of giving financial advice and provide tools to the next generation of financial professionals to serve their clients at the highest level. You see, as providers of financial services, we have the awesome privilege of partnering with consumers to help change family trees, normalize the creation of wealth, and help the industry as a whole do less harm and more good. So it's time to sit back and enjoy the conversation. Welcome to another episode of Conversations for Financial Professionals, where we are shaping the next generation of advice. And today we have a special treat. Margarita Chang, you are a educator, a person that does public policymakers and media about the benefits of competent ethical financial planning. As CEO of Blue Ocean Global Wealth, you help people meet their life goals through the proper management of financial resources. You are a regular columnist for Kiplinger and MarketWatch and a past spokesperson for the AARP Financial Freedom Campaign. In 2017, you were named a woman to watch by Investment News. And in 2021, you were named the seventh most influential financial advisor in Investopedia's top 100. You also volunteer your time as a soulmate, a charity runner for Girls on the Run, raising money to win scholarships for girls. You're also a coach for 261 Fearless, a global supportive social running network which empowers women to connect and take control of their lives through the freedom gained by running. Welcome to the podcast, my friend.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. We're going to talk about this running thing. Are these marathons or half marathons or what are these? Just events, 5Ks, 10Ks? What are they?
So sure. Well, I am running the Chicago Marathon on 10/10/2021. And to be honest, I like to run any distance. I actually like the half marathon best because with 5Ks and 10Ks, I feel so much pressure to run fast. But when it's like 13, it is slow and steady wins the race.
Yeah. Cool. I have a little, and we're going off on a tangent as we get to know each other on this conversation, but I ran track all the way through my second year in college. Definitely not distance. I was a sprinter. But those days had such a, let's call it, impact in so many ways on my joints. How do you take care of your joints and whatnot with all the running that you do?
Well, sure. So I train. So if I know when the marathon is, like I train 20 to 22 weeks. But when I'm not training, I make sure that I do my core work. I do a lot of yoga, Pilates, and then I do my strength exercises. But the reason why I'm really passionate about this is I actually was a coach for Girls on the Run. And I understand that we live in a neighborhood with a lot of opportunities, but DC is not that far from me. And in fact, K Street in DC is where many of the lobbyists are. But not that far from K Street is Ward 7 and 8 in DC. And while it's logistically challenging for me to go to DC to coach, because it would take a while to get there, I realized that I can run these races and raise money so that girls in under-resourced and underserved communities can have what they need, whether that's sports bras, socks, even shoes to be able to run, because these girls the mission is for them to lead healthy, happy, confident lives.
Wow.
That's not so different from what we do as planners, right?
Wow. Wow. I love that. I love that. I think you touched a nerve, and that's an excellent segue into to set up our conversation about finding your niche in financial services, because, you know, so many people that I talk to on the aspiring financial professional front are super passionate. I would say, you know, both of us are seasoned professionals, and so we've been doing this a while. And I would say when I came into the business, it was much more, let's put it this way, it was much less concern about what impact you can make in a person's life and the society at large. I was much less concerned about that versus just the AUM grab. And don't get me wrong, there's people that are still out there. But what I'm finding with aspiring financial professionals is so many people are like, no, I don't want to do that traditional model. I want to do something different, and I want to make an impact. I want to do all these things. And I think having a purpose or a passion project or whatever you want to call it really lends pretty well to attracting the type of people you want to work with. What would you say about that as we kind of open up this conversation?
I definitely agree. I think when we probably both entered the profession, things were a little bit different. A lot of people said, why should I do planning? Why should I pay you for planning? I can get that free. People are understanding the value of advice. Yes, people need to invest to save for their life financial goals, but that is just one component of financial planning. So I do believe we can have our cake and eat it too. I believe that we can do good work and help people run profitable businesses and have an incredible positive impact on society. I do believe this.
Yeah. I'm right there with you. I have been able to look at a little bit of your body of work on the interwebs, as I like to call them. And you made a statement in an interview that's very similar to something I said. I'm going to quote the statement first and then set up what I say and then give you some time to kind of opine on that. You said financial planning truly can transform lives. And what I've said is one of the reasons that I'm doing what I'm doing on both my RIA and the Jumpstart front is because I truly believe that good financial planning, good financial advice has the ability to change family trees, and everybody deserves a right or the privilege to have their family tree changed. I wonder where your belief in this statement came from. Obviously, there's a lot of, you know, community tie and giving back and stuff, and this is a service profession. It's right in the word. Where did this start for Margarita?
I truly do believe financial planning transforms lives. So today I actually just had a conversation. My dad actually fled his hometown when he was a teenager. My dad left China in 1959, and my dad fled China in 1949. Then he went to Taiwan from 49 to 1960. My dad came to America February 29th, 1960. And when my dad came to America, he only had $17.
Wow.
And you know, February 29th, that's the cold. That's like leap year, right?
Yeah.
My dad actually landed in Wisconsin, not California, not New York. Why Wisconsin? My dad, a lot of people don't realize this about my dad, but my dad actually converted to Christianity before he met my mom, and he was sponsored by the Jesuits. There were people who didn't look like him, but you know what? They took the time to welcome him into their community. And when my dad came, he attended Marquette, graduated with a degree in applied mathematics, and started a job at IBM. People took the time to tell him, hey, Paul, in America, you know what? You need life insurance. So before my dad even met my mom, before my dad even got married, he bought life insurance. I'm not here to promote life insurance and tell people they need to buy it, but why would my dad do that? Because someone told him part of putting down roots as America is if you buy life insurance to make sure those who depend on you will not experience emotional and financial distress. He bought that life insurance because his mom and my aunt were dependent on him. He sponsored them. So then my dad got a job, moved to New York, met my mom. He bought life insurance when he got married. And every time he had a child, he bought life insurance. Now you might say, well, Rita, your dad just loves life insurance. No, that was part of protection planning and rebuilding his life. And that means, now my dad was not a financial planner, but he's like, you either need to have assets. If you don't have assets, then you need to make sure that you can protect your wealth and make sure that you make provisions for when you're not there. And this is my dad, you know, didn't mince words. He's like, just because I buy insurance doesn't mean I'm going to die. I'm going to die at some time. But if I don't buy insurance, it doesn't mean I won't. This is just about, you know, keeping it real, yeah, as we would say. But this is just reality.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, oh, go ahead.
Well, let me ask you this real quick. Are you trying to say, maybe if I didn't cut you off, I would know this, but are you trying to say this advice that he was given was kind of transmuted into you or imputed into you as to where you're at in your career and in your love for this particular profession?
I would say yes. I'm the eldest of three girls, and my dad, even though I didn't know about the distinct discipline and profession of financial planning, you know, I knew about life insurance before I was 10. I knew about how to open the family safe. My dad was definitely old school. I couldn't even use a calculator. I had to calculate everything by hand. But then when I was ready to use a calculator, I needed to know how to use a scientific and a financial calculator. Yes, dad was old school. But he felt that, I could just hear him talk. He's no longer with us. He passed away. But he's like, money isn't for boys. Money isn't for girls. Money does not grow in trees. Money does not buy happiness. But whatever you do, money brings opportunities. And you cannot squander those for yourself or your loved ones. So that was definitely instilled in me at a very young age that we don't worship money. But when you have more money, it does mean more peace of mind and opportunities for those in your community and your family. And so, gosh, I do get really moved. That was always my why. So even if someone said to me, well, Rita, you're a lousy salesperson. You're not aggressive enough. I always went back to my why. Why am I doing this? And clients knew that I genuinely cared. They also knew that, you know how we talked about those financial calculators? Remember, my dad would not let me use a calculator. I could understand how to do these calculations. Not that that meant anything, but I think it is some street credibility that, yeah, I know we use financial planning software, but I actually do know about derivatives and all this other stuff where this math comes from. And I think that that helped me build my confidence.
Yeah, yeah, definitely, definitely. Wow, that's an amazing story. When I'm thinking about finding a niche in financial services, you said something that struck a chord with me in that going back to your why may not be the best salesperson. I've actually said these words almost the exact way you said it, which is when I'm mentoring and coaching, I'm like, I don't even think I'm the best salesperson out there. Maybe on a scale of 1 to 10, I'm probably a 6. However, I can really communicate to people and articulate the reason why I'm doing what I'm doing. And to me, that is what builds the real connection there. So having a well-defined why is something I talk about all the time. Anybody that's in my audience that's listening to this now, somebody's like, oh God, they're talking about why again. But like literally that is so important, and people have success in this industry because they're able to focus on that. And I think what you're showing is not only the personally defined why, but also the love and the passion for helping the people have brought you to where you are right now. So I love that. That's excellent.
Well, thank you. Without question, I mean, that's my why. Why are you doing this? Why are you a planner? And I think particularly for people who are underrepresented, sometimes we don't even feel like we belong. We don't think we belong because we don't see people who are like us. Okay, maybe we see more people like us, but still, sometimes we start to question ourselves, right? And people are like, well, you lack confidence. No, I don't think it's that. But what I always do is I go back to my why. Why are you a planner? I'm a planner because I love being able to combine my analytic skills with my communication skills to be able to deliver clear, concise advice to help transform lives. That's my why.
Yeah. That's beautiful. So after you love people, I think you have to love the profession. And often I would say this whole nomenclature of industry versus profession and all this other kind of stuff. What is kind of your take on that whole notion about the financial services industry versus the financial planning profession? Because I think, you know, that deserves a little bit more concrete boundaries around who does what and, you know, the difference between maybe just a financial advisor with a Series 65 or a 7 and 66 versus someone that's set themselves apart and said, okay, CFP or some other planning designation.
I actually love this question so much. What is the difference between an industry and a profession? Profession is a group of qualified people with a particular skill set. That could be accountant, doctor, lawyer, architect. An industry is a group of companies and organizations that all work together. So financial planning, I prefer to say profession because financial planning is a distinct profession within financial services. Now, I'm not going to be the type of person that's going to go up to someone and say, you're wrong. I have my way of getting things across when people don't even know it. So I'll say, how about, what do you think of using profession or financial advice profession? These are open-ended questions. Instead of saying, do you want to use, do you like, they could say no and I'll be shut down. But if I say, what do you think? How do you feel about? They'll tell me. They might say it's stupid, but that's never happened. They're like, oh yeah, well, we don't have like everybody who's planners. I'm like, well, how about financial advice profession? And so I think that if we are going to be serious about having a profession that represents and reflects our communities, then it's better for us to start using a profession so that people perceive us as professionals, not because some people don't even know what a financial planner or financial advisor does. They think, oh, that's boiler room. So I'm with you. I'm going to say profession.
No, I agree. You bring up something, boiler room. I'm dating myself by knowing that movie, exactly what you're talking about. But, you know, they're doing a lot of things that I think, let's just call it the sexy side of, you know, what is marketed and the financial services marketing machine that spends billions of dollars a year on conditioning, for lack of a better term, of what we do. And I remember several conversations I've had with people where I've had to re-educate them on what this profession is about. I'm curious about your thoughts around this. I have a more of an abundance mentality, meaning that as long as I'm doing a good job for people, I'm going to have the people that I'm called to that are going to be attracted to what I do. I don't have to worry about you stealing my clients, and I'm pretty sure you have the same mentality. Obviously, there's been some scarcity mentality that's been introduced into this profession. What are your thoughts around that? And how do you see when someone decides to carve out a niche for themselves, how that really advances this movement of profession forward?
Sure. I mean, I do think, unfortunately, there are people who do have the scarcity mentality. And I think a lot of it has to do with fear, right? Fear if Dominique is successful, Margarita can't be successful. But you know what? Margarita can be successful. Dominique can be successful. There's room for many of us to be successful. It's not a zero-sum game. And I know I've been criticized for thinking like that. People are like, you're so naive. You're not cutthroat. You're not aggressive. You're not going to be successful. You know what? They're right. If they measure success in that way, I'm not going to be successful. But then I go back to my why. So I think that sometimes when we think about niche or niche, you think, okay, what do these people look like? What do they do? But I think the best way to find out what your niche or niche is think about like how you like to work with your clients, what problems you're solving for them. Is it retirement income? Is it how to save for retirement and college at the same time? Is it charitable giving and estate planning? So sometimes it can be overwhelming. Well, what people do I like to serve, or what are they good at? What's my niche? So I would say that's a good place to start. And people who do have areas of specialty do achieve scale because they're able to really understand what that group of prospects and clients needs.
The scale question is huge because when I talk to existing advisors that are having issues with growth, or they're stuck, I often go into this conversation where, okay, well, so what's your superpower is what I call it. And how are you taking that superpower set of skills and delivering that to clients? What does that look like? And it's a very, very weird conversation. It's not linear and it's all over the place. And I'm like, that's probably how your messaging is coming across more than likely. And one of the things that you said about this scalability, I wonder if you want to kind of dig deeper on that and kind of double click, because maybe the traditional mindset, or maybe the person that's looking at this is thinking, niche or niche from this vocational standpoint. Like, I want to work with all doctors or dentists or whatever. But maybe speak to, because you brought this in, like maybe looking at internally, like what do I like to do as an advisor? What am I good at in addition to, or maybe even mutually exclusive of, where people like to hang out, or if you want to just deal with fraternities and sororities and affinity groups or things like that. I think there's maybe the sky's the limit, and we probably need to take the blinders off, or at least maybe the limits off, the ceilings off, of what we're thinking about when we do specialized marketing like that.
Absolutely. I mean, I always tell people, think about what you're good at and think about what you like. So I know that there's some things that I don't like, but I have to do them. What do you mean? Well, I don't really like compliance, but I have to do that to stay in business, right? So I want you to think about what you're good at and what you like. Now, when we are newer to the profession, we don't really know what we're good at and we don't know what we like, right? A lot of people will tell you, you need to be persistent. And there's some truth to that, but you also reserve the right to pause and stop doing something that's not working for you. So what do you mean? I can definitely explain. I work with people in a collaborative manner. I don't talk down to people or do the objection handling. To me, I struggled with that. It seems so disrespectful. It violated a lot of my cultural upbringing. I realized that that was very combative. So I said to myself, I'm not doing this. Now, I did not disrespect my sales manager. I did exactly what my sales manager did for 2 years, because I need to like keep the numbers on the book, and I have to be smart enough to be dumb enough to do what they tell me, right? You have to be smart enough to be dumb enough not to question it. But then when I started to realize a little bit of success, I said to myself, you know what? I want to have fewer, more meaningful relationships. I'm not meant to work with every client. And how did I handle this? One day I put some of my clients in the reassignment pool. And my manager's like, what is this? And I was like, you know what? I don't feel like it's a good fit. They weren't working with me. Someone covered me on that appointment and sold that client. They didn't buy. And I don't think I want to work with them. So I think it's really important for you to think about what type of relationship you want, who you like to work with. And then you can even ask open-ended questions like, what do you find most enjoyable about working with me? And they'll say, oh, you know, I like how you explain things to me. I like how you're not pushy. I like how you focus on my extended family and me and make sure that we're all on the same page. So I think that's a really good starting point for people.
No, that's excellent. That's excellent advice, because there's an old term one of my mentors uses, like, we get too wrapped around the axle around this. You know, we're, you know, kind of majoring on the minors, if you will. When at the end of the day, it does really probably get down to, what do you enjoy doing? What are you good at? And to your point about career changers that may not have a what you're good at because you're just coming into this field, you do have transferable skills. You do have soft skills. You do have negotiating and maybe communication skills. And you probably need to lean into those at first anyway. And I wonder if you can touch on something else before we talk about more of the how of finding a niche, which is this whole notion around settling. We talked about this in the virtual green room a little bit before we started, because there is, let's call it the notion of, hey, I'm a career changer. I got bills to pay. Maybe I have mouths to feed and whatnot. And I'm getting in here. Maybe I've taken some CFP classes, but I don't have my hours, so I can't use the marks and yada, yada, yada. And everybody I apply to wants 2 or 3 years of experience for that person. And so you brought up this term, what I think is a very, very appropriate term is, like, how do they not settle? Like, how do they stay true to their why, but yet at the same time find their place in the financial services industry, whether that's inside a niche type firm or not? What is maybe your advice for that person?
So the first thing I tell people is, you know what, when you join the profession, I don't want you to think that you can't evolve or your position can't evolve. I think when we tell people that and just put it out there, that because you're joining the profession, you don't know what you like and you don't know what you don't like. And that's fair. Just say it. It really puts people at ease. I don't know what I like. I haven't worked at an RIA. I haven't worked at a large firm, so I don't know. I just know that I don't want to have to sell stuff to people and do the friends and family thing. So what I think is really important is to come with an open heart and open mind. You may know a lot about personal finance, and you may have skills and qualifications from a previous career. And it's really important that wherever you're working, that people respect and honor that. Just because you've only been on the job or in your new role for 2 weeks does not mean that you have nothing of value to bring. So that's really important, letting people know that as they evolve, their needs and their likes and wants will evolve. And I think it's important to, like I said, open heart, open mind, but then also take advantage of opportunities, you know, to learn more. I know that firms provide a lot of continuing education. I joined the Financial Planning Association, FPA, and I, you know, attended continuing education sessions to learn more. So I think just because you've earned the marks doesn't mean you know everything. I certainly don't want to dilute people's knowledge, but never stop learning and be open-minded and ask questions. We talked about open heart, open mind, curiosity. When people know that you're well-intentioned and are intellectually curious, I think they're going to be more open-minded.
I would agree with that. That's one of the things that I advocate for, which is doing your research, doing your homework. Shameless plug here. It's like I'll get questions often on social media through DM or whatnot. And people will ask me stuff, and I don't mind answering questions, don't get me wrong, but sometimes it's like, okay, so you must have just found out about me. Check this out. I actually have a whole YouTube channel with a playlist for just that question. Go check it out. Go Google that. And I think what I'm getting at is the tenacity, the persistence to invest in yourself, which I think is what you're saying too. So as we kind of bring this in for a landing, I want to maybe touch on three groups of what I would call next-gen financial professionals. And these are people that maybe didn't come along inside, didn't join the profession at the same time as we did, because I know I did. I joined with a lot of baggage. My mentors gave me a lot of baggage to carry. But these men and women, I think they see it differently. They see, you know, maybe I don't need to serve 1,000 families. I can maybe serve 50 to 100 and be very intimate in those relationships and really help people move the ball up and down the field, if you will. I want you to talk to, maybe give some very specific advice to these focus groups. Do you want me to give you all three groups first, or do you want to give, you could go one by one?
You can give me all three groups.
Okay. So the recent college grad with a finance-related degree. Then we have the person we've been talking about, this career changer that's always had this love for financial services, and now this is a second or third, maybe even encore career for them. And then last but not least, the existing financial professional that's kind of like frustrated with their current situation. We don't want to name any names, but maybe they're ready to get off that friends and family list and maybe start their own. So what would be your advice to them about this conversation topic about finding a niche or a niche?
Sure. So for the recent college grad or someone who's about to graduate from college, I would advise him, her, them to be involved in campus organizations, professional associations, student chapters, because their school may not have a financial planning association or they may not have a financial planning major, but I would encourage them to be involved with the professional associations, clubs, and just learn. The other thing that I would encourage them to do, and I even made my own kid do this, is do strengths finders. A lot of people are like, you know, I don't have any strengths. Yes, you do. We all have strengths. This is going to be helpful for you. You know what your strengths are. And then you can use that when you're describing your capabilities. So, you know, this is really very important. I encourage, and anybody can do the strengths finders, you know, a career changer or someone who's frustrated, but particularly a recent grad, because this is crazy. We were all young once, and we're asking people who are 22 years old to have 5 years of experience, right? It's ridiculous. So I would tell them to be involved. And then I really hope people act on this. When you're a student, take advantage of being a student. People always want to help students. They should want to help alum too. Students, informational interviews. Yeah. You know what? I have such a soft place in my heart, being the first one in my family to go to college. I try to always make the time for students, especially those who are interested in financial planning. Oh my goodness. So people who are tuning in, I'll make time for you. So that's my advice for the recent or a grad in finance.
Great.
Career changer. Career changer. Some of this information is going to be the same. I'd say, if you don't want to say informational interviews, meet people for coffee, Zoom, drinks, you name it, what your thing is, to learn what they like about being a planner. Also, attend industry or professional events. Join the FPA and attend events. You know, I'm past president of FPA NC, that's Financial Planning Association, National Capital Area. And I told people, I can't guarantee that you're going to get a job coming here. But what I can't guarantee is this is the type of thing that you get far more out of it than you put in. So when you sign up for a committee and you work, people are going to see you at your best. I have helped people get jobs. And the current advisor frustrated. We've all hit a wall. Ask yourself, what is it about your situation that frustrates you? Is it the compensation structure? Is it the environment? It's okay to be honest. And then talk to people. You're not alone, and find out a little bit more about their culture. I've even told my own kids that persistency is really important, but sometimes there's just as much value in stopping and say, you know what, this isn't working.
No, that's really good. I remember a conversation I had with Louis Rosa and Chloe Moore, half of the BLX team, and Louis was talking about how he met Chloe and how he learned so much from the little study group / mastermind that they formed about things he didn't know about. Not that he was necessarily frustrated in his position as an advisor, but just gleaning that information from another person that understands it, firm owner. And so I think there's a lot of value in what you just described. I think so often, and the industry does this to us. They condition us also, as well as consumers of financial services, which is like, we got to be an island. You know, if we're frustrated, we need to go leave and start our own firm, which maybe you do, or maybe you don't. You know, I think the exercise that you just said is probably a little bit more valuable first to do that than to go and start your own firm, because there's a lot of pain with that also. And it may relieve one pain only to give you like four or five other ones. But anyways, no, they're really, really great informational tips on all three of those groups. As you know, this is a podcast to empower that next gen financial professional to serve their ideal client at the next level. With that being said, what word or words of wisdom would you want to leave with the audience, Margarita?
I think that it's so important to know how blessed we are to be planners. What I mean by that is we get to choose what families, what individuals and families we want to serve and how we want to serve them. It is very inspiring and empowering. We are changing lives every day. So I just want people to know that I know doing financial planning is hard work. Gathering the assets, liabilities, income, expenses, insurance, you know, it's very tedious, right? But like my dad said, garbage in, garbage out. This is not garbage. These are people's financial lives. So it is okay to be thorough. It is okay to walk away from people who don't buy into planning. So that's what I wanted people to know.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Yeah, I think I just want to put a book in on that, because you don't have to have everybody as a client. Like literally, if you run your business model right, in most, you can have a critical mass of people that you serve if you price your services right and you do a good job for them. And so I love that you've given the freedom to be like, you don't have to have everybody, because that's exactly what the industry's message is to you, is like, you know, everybody with a pulse should be your client. And it's like, why should that be the case? Because that may be frustrating to me. So Margarita, thank you for sharing your wisdom. Thank you for sharing your time with this platform. I really, really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hey there. I hope you really enjoyed this conversation. Before we go, just a few things. First, the best way to retain what you just learned is to do more than just listen. You might want to write down your most important takeaway and then give yourself a deadline to apply it. For bonus points, you might also let someone hold you accountable to that deadline. Next, Remember that the only way more people will know about this podcast is if you share it. You can do that by sharing a link to this episode on your social media or by leaving a review on iTunes so that it reaches a wider audience. I'd appreciate it if you took the time to do either or both. And finally, if you'd like to join my free community to learn more about how you can become a next generation financial professional, please visit my website at www.domhendersonsr.com and click the button that says, I'd like to learn more. I'd love to hear from you and point you in the right direction. Bye for now until our next conversation.